Anything seems like a good idea after you've had a few.
Downtown at a railway station.
Yeah, that's this show.
Riding in my car, and I'm listening to the radio.
It's time for Dukes and Bell.
Oh, someone told me it's the Black Beverly Hills. Is that true?
Driving in Atlanta just got a whole lot more bearable.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Hi, everybody. Carl Dukes and Mike Bell. The names that mean goodness.
Say my name, you know who I am.
Carl Dukes.
I drink and I know things.
Oh, don't question my authority, thanks.
King Kong ain't got on me.
Sometimes you just got to call somebody, and I'm not ashamed to say it. You know,
And Mike Bell.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you.
Hope you guess my name.
Bring a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes until somebody passes out, and then bring one every 10 minutes, right?
Get ready for the best 5 hours of your life.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is Dukes and Bell.
Brought to you by Finley Roofing. We've got you covered. Atlanta's most trusted and recommended roofer.
You know what? Why don't we start doing the stuff that other guys have done on other radio shows around the country?
No!
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Atlanta, what's going on? It's Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Mark Zeno in for Mike. He's on vacation. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, we now know who Mike Tomlin has officially named the starter in Pittsburgh for week one. Now, this is according to Jay Glazer, who says the Steelers have named Russell Wilson as their week one starter. And this is all we've been waiting for, right? We've been wanting to know who's going to be the guy we're facing. Is it going to be Justin? Is it going to be Russ? We now know it's Russ. I do think, by the way, that Mike Tomlin thought about this and said, look, if we don't get off to a good start, Zeno, we can bench him, have no repercussions whatsoever because there's no financial repercussions to this deal, and we can go with Justin, who's younger, obviously more upside, and see where this thing takes us, and maybe we figure out if we want to move forward with Justin or not, because I do not think win, lose, or draw that they're moving forward with Russell Wilson. They're not giving him a long-term deal at 36, about to be 37 years old. But with that said, does this make you feel any better? Do you feel the same? How do you feel now knowing that that's the guy we're going to face, and we've all been kind of wondering, you know, who might we have better odds against if one of these guys was going to start week one?
Let me just put it to you this way in the big picture context, right? You went into this, the Steelers went into this camp with a, quote, open competition. If you had a good quarterback, it wouldn't be an open competition. There's a reason why both of these guys were free and available. They're both likely to start multiple games. They're both likely to play high at one point, low at another. And honestly, it's a coin flip. I mean, it really does. I would love to hear the plausible argument as to why facing Russell Wilson is better than facing Justin Fields, or vice versa for that matter. I don't think it matters. At the end of the day,
I do think one has more athletic upside.
Sure.
That's Justin
Fields, yes. I mean, you know, the idea of the dual threat that he is presents some more defensive challenges for the Falcons. But again, in reality, this game will be won by the Falcons' offense against the Steelers' defense. If the Steelers' defense comes out and plays and they can't block up front and they can get to Kirk Cousins and create havoc there, the Falcons will struggle in this the whole game. But I would tell you, if the Falcons get to 23 in this game, Carl, it should be good night. I don't know if they'll cover the number at that point, but it should be good night. They should be able to win this game. You put 23 up on this defense, even with Russell Wilson there. Russell Wilson last year in an offense with Sean Payton that is crafted for quarterbacks to be successful barely averaged 20 points a game.
True.
So, you know, just write that number down and circle it. You guys can, you know, cut the tape right here and play it back after week one. If the Falcons get to 23, they're winning the game.
You may not like or may not respect their wide receiving core because one of these guys was with us and didn't do anything in Van Jefferys. George Pickens coming out of Georgia, high promise.
Pickens is good.
A lot of expectations, yes. But I don't think we've seen him at his best because of the quarterback situation. Kenny Pickett, yeah, right? Now you get in there and you're going to see if Russ, and he should be whatever quarterback is playing, he should be their number one target. But then you'd look at the other wide receiver in Calvin Austin and you say, okay, do those guys scare you? Not necessarily, but that's not why I think we're going to win this game. I've said it for a week now. I'll say it all into next week until we get to this game. Their offensive line is not good. It's banged up. And when it is good, those young players, they're asking a lot of. They drafted offensive line, And the point that I've been saying is this is an area where I don't know if they figured it out. Even if Russ plays well against us, I think we can get pressure. I do not think they'll run the ball as well as they want to in an Arthur Smith offense. And more importantly, to your point, Zeno, it is a Super Bowl defense. Say what you want. T.J. Watt, Cameron Hayward, Patrick Queen. I mean, you're talking about Minka Fitzpatrick. They got Super Bowl caliber guys on that defense. And it is a defense that should keep you in many games. Mm-hmm. So you're right. That point threshold, I think you're right about that.
Here's the thing. And this is the key to the game. Okay? And this is something we talk about in the sports betting world a lot, just so people can understand the context. Game script, right? This is not an offense the Steelers have that is built to play catch up.
No.
Period. So the point is
just
for the Falcons,
we weren't last year.
Right. So the point is you take the points early, even if it's fourth and one from the 21-yard line, take the points, get up, and force the Steelers' offense to continue to have to make plays to get themselves into a positive game script. As long as you keep Russell Wilson and company in a negative game script, you're always going to have the advantage. Now, we get more news, and thanks to Brandon Mincy, who tweeted this to you and I, Dukes, that Adam Schefter tweeted out, Pittsburgh starting offensive guard Isaac Samalo, is that how you say that, left practice today with apparent pec injury. So they may be missing an O-lineman, a starting O-lineman for the game.
They're already missing one. He's great, by the way. He might be their best offensive lineman, left guard, Samalo. This is what I'm talking about. We can talk about all the brand names and the star power, all that if you want to. This still gets down to blocking and tackling. And right now, with a healthy defensive line, and we know what our roster looks like, I truly believe that we're going to be able to get after Russell, get some pressure, not only get sacks, get some forced throws because he'll be pressed a little bit, but it gets back to the O-line. And this is why I said all along, I thought maybe Justin, knowing that, might get the nod. But here's where I'm at. It's easier to go away from Russell Wilson and go to Justin Fields than it is to go away from Justin Fields and try to go back to him later in the season because people will say, what are you doing, Mike Tomlin? Well, what are you doing? So you start the vet. You start the guy that's won a Super Bowl. Whether you think he's any good now, whether you think he's a bum, as we like to say on this show, the fact is you go with that and you see where it takes you. And then Zeno, 4, 5, 6 games in, and it'll be a Pittsburgh problem, not ours. I just want to get past week one. They will figure it out and say, you know what, he's not giving us what we need, and maybe it's week 8, who knows, and Justin gets the nod, and then you just roll from there. At the end of the season, though, remember, they can walk away from both of these guys for literally nothing, and that is the benefit. The downside of that is you are talking about a team that has expectations to go to the playoffs, which is why everybody talks about our first three games. 404-726-0929. It is Dukes and Bell. Zeno in for Mike. Find us on social media. I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes. Follow us at Dukes and Bell 929. That's the radio show. And, of course, the radio station at 929 The Game. Zeno, give me your Twitter handle.
At Mark Zeno, MarkZinno. We also accept all insults there. So if you're going to insult me at Dukes' Twitter handle, just include me in it.
And I got plenty of that already this week.
I know. Is your inbox full?
It really is.
Thank you.
Listen, when I leave here, I really don't want to hear about how you dislike Zeno. I prefer to go home and eat dinner, but I've gotten those two.
Carl, you've known me for 10 years now. Generally dislike.
This is true. All right, 404-726-0929. Tomorrow, you heard Andy and Randy. We are going to be over at the Tour Championship as well. I actually can't wait. I was just talking to Ash downstairs, and he was telling me they were over there yesterday for, you know, one of the kickoff events. The course has changed. It's going to be great. If you're going at any point this weekend, it's not going to look anything like you expected. As a matter of fact, they came out with a couple of rule changes because they know with the way that these holes have been changed, the golfers are going to try to cut some of these holes, and now they've created a couple of new out-of-bounds areas. But we're going to get over there tomorrow. We'll be doing the show live at The Landing is where we will be. Andy and Randy will be at Tito's Steelhouse. All right, want to hear from you. We start with that news because it is what we've all been waiting for. And for Falcon fans now, I'll tell you this. I feel a little bit more confident. I thought, Zeno, that if you started Justin, he might present a few more problems with the – if you wanted to, right? You could do the read option thing. You could do the – all the things that he's capable, and we saw certainly at Ohio State, and keeping the ball, quarterback keepers and all that kind of stuff. You're not doing that with Russ. You're just not.
I mean, the other part that would scare me a little bit about Fields, maybe Fields took a little personal.
Sure.
That the Falcons passed on him when they did.
Yep.
You know, athletes all pay attention to that stuff. I mean, remember Amon-Ra St. Brown knew every single receiver drafted before him in order? You know, like that's fuel for these guys, right? And so Maybe Justin takes a little bit more personal and wants to show out. Did he play against the Falcons when he was with the Bears last year or the year before? Which game? I think he did, didn't he?
He did.
He did. Yeah.
I don't
remember if the Bears won. I don't remember the game that well. But, you know, again, that to your point, I just think the skill set's a little bit different. The running component certainly changes things. Russell is mobile, but he's not going to take off and run the way Justin would.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, let's see what the secondary can come up with because, you know, if we assume that the pass rush may take some time to develop, it's going to be on those guys to cover long enough to get to Russell Wilson.
Well, here's the thing, though. With this offensive line in flux, okay, I'm not wasting time, Zeno. I'm coming after these guys immediately. Listen, if I am Jimmy Lake, hi, Jimmy, I am coming after Russ to start the game, and I want to test that offensive line. Now, I'm not saying we're going to blitz every play. That's ridiculous. But you do come after them and see, hey, how are they protecting? Because as the game goes on, you're going to figure out, hey, this is where the weak spot is, and it needs to be exploited. I'm not going to sit back and allow the Steelers to get going and sitting back on our heels. We need to come after these guys. The O-line is a question mark right now for them. It may not be in Week 8, but who cares? We're not going to see them in Week 8. 404-726-0929. So that is the announcement today. We're going to continue to talk about it more here on the show. But Russell Wilson, and by the way, we know he should have 2 Super Bowls. Second one wasn't on him, right? I know he throws the interception, but everybody knows give the ball to beast mode and you got another Super Bowl there.
It was the right call.
Okay? Did you just say it was the right call?
100% the right call.
Oh, goodness gracious. The ball got intercepted and they lost the Super Bowl.
It was a hell of a play by Malcolm Butler. It was 100% the right call to throw in that spot. I don't know if that was the right play to call, but it was 100% the right call to throw in that spot. You want me to break it down for you? Because I can.
No. Because they had a guy who could get you 8 yards with one carry.
But again, there was a third. That was second down when it happened.
Yes.
There was a third down and there was only one timeout left. If you run the ball on second down, you don't get it. You have to call the timeout. Then you're throwing on third and throwing on fourth and the run game is out. So that's why they passed the ball there. Because an incompletion stops the clock and you get a chance to run the ball again.
You know,
and you
what?
Have your full playbook.
I never would have thought that we would start the show and you would be arguing about whether it was the right play call.
It was the right play call.
It was a terrible play call.
It was the right decision to pass. I don't know if it was the right play call. It was the right decision to pass.
He should have 2. But.
Good job, Malcolm Butler.
I don't think he's.
Way to study film.
I don't think he's that guy anymore.
No.
I don't
think close to that guy.
I don't think Russell's that guy anymore.
He's not carrying an offense anywhere. He's not making enough plays in certain spots. Yeah. Oh, no, by the way, Mr. Yo tweeted us that the Bears beat the Falcons 37-17.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're talking about Russ. I mean, Justin.
Justin, yeah.
Justin, yeah.
He had a good game, it looks like.
Yeah, he played well against us. All right, you see what happened there, right? You went down that rabbit hole of talking about Seattle passing the ball, and Oren had to restart the bump music because you went on and on.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you, Oren. Thank you, Oren.
You made an outlandish statement. I had to rebut it.
You could have done that in the break. Hey, Carl, what's coming up next, bud?
Thank you.
We are going to talk
about the Braves because, believe it or not, Mark Zeno said earlier this week
they can't win 8 of 10.
They didn't deserve it to be the third wild card.
I got people tweeting me because of that.
Well, they've just won 8 out of 10.
They're still in the third wild card.
We'll talk about it next. It is Dukes and Bell. Big O's behind the glass. He's doing all the things today. He's our engineer. Turtle is on later tonight, so he is not here. Our buddies up in Pittsburgh, the affiliate 93.7, The Fan, their family, they said today that they always knew it was Russ.
Whatever.
That Russ took over the team after the calf healed, and that Tomlin said it was a difficult choice not to make Justin Fields feel like he was lied to about the job being a competition. Okay, whatever. However it played out, whatever happened, I'll say this. I do think that Russ came back from that calf, and I don't know if you guys watched any of this because, again, it was preseason, but Tomlin let both of these guys play in this last preseason game. And he wanted to see both of them. And Russ came in, I think he was like 5 of 7, did a really good job, led him down to a score. Justin came in, I want to say they got 2 drives or something of that nature. And he looked halfway decent as well. I mean, it wasn't like, for me, Russ, and I wasn't at practice every day. This is what we've been telling you about Kirk Cousins, for everybody that's concerned, and what's his leg look like. And we've been telling you. We've been seeing him every day at practice. I was not at the Steelers practice every day, so I cannot tell you what he looked like. But in the game, it wasn't as if Russ ran away with this. Like, it wasn't like head and shoulders above what Justin Fields did.
Nobody ran away with anything. But
Zeno, that's what I'm talking about. When I hear them like, oh, we always knew it was Russ. Since when?
I mean, look, you didn't bring him there to be a backup despite the fact that the cost would have cost nothing. Like, you don't bring in a former Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Should have been twice.
Again, right decision to pass. You don't bring in a former Super Bowl winning quarterback to be the backup unless he's so late in his career. Like, it's Joe Flacco, right?
Yes.
Like, that's a Super Bowl corner. He knows there's nothing left in the tank. He's just there for an emergency situation.
Although he
worked
did
out
leave
well for him in Cleveland.
I was going to say, he
worked
did leave
really
Cleveland
well.
To the
Got
playoffs.
Him another job in Indianapolis, too. So good for Joe Flacco. But the point simply is that, you know, a guy, you don't bring in a former Super Bowl winning quarterback who was a starter the year before, right? So, and that's what Russ was. I think it was always his, and the flyer was truly on Fields to see if he could pop. And again, to your point, like, if neither one of these guys ran away with this thing, you never solve the problem.
No. And I don't know if they have.
No, you didn't. Of course not. I mean, in reality, it's Mike Tomlin, it's the Steelers. So when we talk about identities in football, the Steelers' identity since Mike Tomlin has been very simple. Run the ball and play defense, right? We'll beat you in the trenches. We'll beat you up front. We'll make enough plays otherwise at every other position to win the game.
Yep.
You know, even with Roethlisberger, you know, for as good as he was throughout his career and the Hall of Fame career that he's had, you know, he could certainly throw the ball, open things up a lot for them, made them a lot more formidable. But they've never gone away from who they are and what makes the Steelers the Steelers. That's why they've been so successful for so long.
I don't disagree with that. And that's why I know that will be the game plan coming in here. This is not Russell coming in here throwing for 350 and four touchdowns, guys. If that happens, we're in trouble, okay? This is going to be Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren, who, by the way, is questionable. I don't even know if he's going to be available for week one, running the ball and trying to set up some play action for George Pickens and company down the field. But I think we can get after him. All right, we'll talk more about it. If you're just joining us, we just mentioned Steelers are going with Russell Wilson over Fields as their starter to start the season, which means that's who we will see week one come September 8th as the Steelers come to Mercedes-Benz. By the way, our coverage, 11 o'clock, kick it at 1 o'clock. And I'm already promoting it because I'm super psyched. All right, how do you feel, by the way?
Like, physically or just
No. How do you feel about that idiotic statement you made earlier this week?
Wrong.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do. Okay. Idiotic, but still factually correct. They've won 8 out of 10 and they still haven't moved out of the third wild card.
They've won 8 out of 10. You said win 8 out of 10. They did.
And you're leaving off the other part of the sentence.
What?
And if they could have won 8 out of 10 and moved out of the third wild card, they would have done it already. They haven't. If you haven't increased your position, right?
They're still three and a half games in front of the Mets.
Well, it's the Mets. I mean, you know,
they still own a playoff position right now.
Good.
They've won 8 out of 10, Zeno.
They won 8 out of 10. Hey,
Dubs,
guys, I said they
should have.
Okay, you want me to say it, Dukes? I'll say it because I'm not afraid to say it. I was wrong. Okay. They won 8 out of 10. Good. But
thank
my point
you.
Simply stands the same.
Thank
they
you.
Haven't increased their position.
But they're playing better. Admit it. Yeah,
that wasn't the debate.
They're playing better.
These two games, look, they stacked runs in back-to-back games.
They did.
Right? So do it three in a row. Let's see what happens. I mean, I'm not saying they won't, but the point simply is that we've seen this before from them where they get you start to feel like they turn the corner. And I'll go back to the point where I thought they started to turn the corner in the second half, and I was let down drastically. After the Milwaukee series, and they won the first two in Miami, right? They had won four in a row. Their offense went 9-3, 5-6, 4-5, right? Okay, we're starting to score runs. We're starting to hit.
And then we didn't.
And then what happened?
And then
you scored
did.
Three against Miami and lost. You got shut out in back-to-back games. You finally scored five and gave up eight. You finally scored seven, gave up 16. You scored five, gave up six. Like, it fell apart. And then they lost six straight.
Yeah.
And that's been the issue with this team. That's been the bugaboo all year long is that, you know, now they've won five out of six. They've won eight out of ten.
Eight out of ten.
Yeah, 8 out of 10. Didn't think they could do it. They've won 8 out of 10 since losing six straight. So that's why you're not increasing your position because you dug yourself that hole before. Now you start to move back to where you are. You're still in the third wild card. I mean, I'll say this much. You know, they have an interesting set of games coming up here. After this Minnesota series, they're going to go to Philadelphia for four.
It's big.
It will decide.
It's big.
I'm not going to say it's going to decide a division because, again,
chances
are...
Well, if we get swept, it will.
Well, yeah. Okay, let me refer. You're right. From that...
Yes.
A sweep on either way will tilt the balance, will tilt the scales in one direction or the other. Four-game sweeps are very hard to accomplish.
True.
In Major League Baseball. They're not easy.
I mean, unless we're just up there eating cheesesteaks all damn weekend. I don't know.
But, again, and then what happens, and this is where the soft part of the schedule comes in. Let's just say, for argument's sake, you split Philly. And you're right where you are. You get three against Colorado, three against Toronto, and two against Washington.
Sweep.
Eight
sweep,
games.
Sweep.
Eight games.
Sweeps.
You got to go 6-2 at least. You got to.
At least.
So if you take three or four from the Phillies, right, then you jump up two games, and then you got to go
sweep,
at least six.
Sweep. Sweep.
I want you to save this clip. So
because those are terrible teams.
You're right. I won't be here for it, but, you know, you play that when it doesn't happen and go, hey, Carlson was right.
Sweep, sweep, sweep. 8 of 10, and I'm with you on this.
This is where you make your move.
Yes.
This is where you make your move all the way through the end, you know, right through September 11th, and then you brought welcome in the Dodgers. Cincinnati may be fighting for a playoff spot at that point in time. You know, you got seven tough games. So, yeah, there's a lot left that they need to do.
This hour is brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your game at mancavestore.com. It's Dukes and Bells. N-O-N and from Mike. Here's the thing about last night. So I had the game on. I got multiple TVs. And I'm watching. And I'm seeing the score 4-0, 4-0, 4-0, 4-0. Inning after inning after inning after inning. And I'm like, oh, well, this is a wrap. And I literally turned away, Zeno. Looked back at the other TV. Mm. And all of a sudden they had run off and tied the game. And I'm like, what happened? Jesse Chavez Bull happened. It was terrible. So the good news is Matt Olson drove in the go-ahead run. Travis d'Arnaud had an RBI single. Lorenado put the game away, I think it was, with a two-run double last night. Point is they scored four in the 10th. So it was a crazy game, but it was one, again, they showed some resiliency in coming back and being able to hold on and find a way to get it done. This is not what we've done a lot of this year. We just haven't.
Even at that, you know, I mean, you gave up two runs in the bottom of the 10th, too.
You did.
To make it sweatier than it needed to be.
Nobody likes it sweaty.
No. And God bless you if you had the under 8.5 in that game because you lost it next year innings.
I hate that. That's a bad beat.
It's impossible to play unders now with the extra innings the way they are. It's just a death wish. But again, you know, is there part of you that wants to say, well, you only scored four runs in regulation, so to speak, and you came back? The extra innings always equates to more runs because you put the runner on second, things of that nature. Take it for what it's worth. They're hitting the ball better. It feels like, again, they're starting to put it together. Because at least at this point, with all the guys who are hurt, at least now you have consistency.
Right.
Right? The guys who are here, Urshela's getting the start every day.
They're
going
to be here. They're going to be here.
Witt's getting the start every day. Like, they're here, and this is it. And they'll start to turn the corner and get a little bit more comfortable. Let's hope they can do it. You pull off a three-game sweep of Minnesota in Minnesota. That's a good team, Minnesota. They can hit the ball better than they did last year, and they certainly can pitch. So this is one of these that could catapult you going forward.
Let's hope so. One thing I enjoyed last night, two things actually. Schwellenbach, K's over four and two-thirds.
Kid's putting it together, man.
He is. He looks the part. And when they brought him up, I remember asking Alex Anthopoulos, you know, our general manager, like, he's like, he's one of the top prospects in our organization. We got to give the kid a shot. And he is living up to it. Then we saw Money Harris. If you were concerned about the wrist, don't be. He goes deep. This put the Braves up in the second, but this was another thing, and I went, okay, we're going to be all right.
A little bit more distracting.
Michael Harris down the right field line, and that ball is fair. I think the wrist is feeling pretty good for Michael Harris. 2-0 Braves in the second. My, 424 feet.
Yeah, I mean, that felt good only because we were all concerned about, you know, the wrist and how that was going to play out. But Money Harris is fine. The lineup's fine. And Zeno's right. We do have some consistency. It's not the guys you expected. It's not the guys we thought it would be at this point in the season. But these guys are putting it together. Let's hope it continues. 8 out of 10, Zeno. 8 out of 10.
Good job.
Hey, coming up, we had a visit with Mark Raimondi from ESPN talking about our roster. Now that we know Russell Wilson's starting for the Steelers, and by the way, he spoke today. We'll let you hear a little bit of that coming up in our NFL Blitz. Mark Raimondi goes through this roster and talks to us about the decisions our Falcons made as we get ready for the start of the season right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I thought they did a really good job considering there weren't really big decisions to be made. I know Mark made a big stink about the quarterback situation. And some people are going, okay, what are we doing? Why are we carrying three? We talked about Cleveland keeping four, which is silly, but they're going to try to trade one of those guys. But there's nothing to be upset about in regards to our roster. But we'll hear what Mark had to say. Mark Raimondi, that is, not Mark Zeno, who's in for Mike today. By the way, got to wish him a happy birthday. Send Mike a happy birthday tweet, all right? Let him know. He's on vacation, but today is his birthday.
Do you want me to do it?
I don't think that'd be good. But you can send him one at Mike Bell ATL.
You sure?
You can send him a happy birthday.
What do you think would be a worse decision?
Oh, you've made many of those.
Me sending him a happy birthday tweet or passing the ball for Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl. What was a worse decision? What would be a worse decision?
Well, you losing a Super Bowl.
Is worse?
Yes.
So then I should do it.
I'm not saying that.
I'm not endorsing this.
I'm not co-signing. All I'm saying is that's a bad decision when you lose a Super Bowl.
They're equally both bad decisions. It's kind of like the whole idea, put a gun to your head, Carl, I'll choose the bullet. Put a gun to my head, I choose the bullet. Thank you.
Fair enough. Hey, Seth Emerson's going to join us coming up a little bit later on in the show. The more I feel like, and I did this last year, maybe it was 2 years ago. You remember the Oregon game when Georgia just blew doors on Oregon? It was Dan Lanning's
49-3,
first year.
Yeah. First game.
Yes. And I was like, okay. Seeing all this stuff about Oregon and their players and who was coming back, and I was like, eh. Then we talked to a guy up there, and he's like, they're going to be good. I'm feeling that way about this Clemson game. And I'm curious to see what Seth thinks about this, because the more I see and talk to folks about, you know, where they're at and how the team looks, et cetera, I still just feel like Georgia's going to blow doors in this game. I just do. And the number looks weird simply because it's week one. If you knew about Georgia's team as you have the last few years, you would not hesitate to say, of course, they're going to win by two touchdowns. But because it's the first game of the season, you're a little reluctant because you haven't had a chance to see this version of the Dogs. But I just feel like the more I sit here and think about it, you know, you study long, study wrong. I'm like, they're going to blow them. They're going to blow them out.
Yeah.
By the way, two touchdowns is a blowout, by the way.
Yeah, that's fair. It's, I mean, you know, in college, not so much, but yeah, against this team,
against this team,
a two touchdown win against the top 25 team is a blowout.
I agree.
You know, even if they had played one game against the Sisters of the Poor, right, and put up 50 and won 50-3, right, we'd go into the game against Clemson going, oh, they're going to destroy him. And I guarantee the number would reflect that from odds maker standpoint. It might even be at 14.5 and be sitting there pretty resoundingly. That said, again, there's still. I think it's valid, the hesitation about Georgia's offense and what it's going to look like. Is it as potent? Is it, you know, able to score 40 in the blink? And again, I only do that through the prism of last year when Carson Beck took over, things started out very slow.
Okay.
You know, remember the South Carolina game? They were trailing 14-3 at half or 14-0 at half.
It was week three. It was a game, right.
Right. If I'm right, the week, whatever it was, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I know you guys will. But that said, you know, we always began to wonder, you know, was Mike Bobo the right guy? Is the offense going to work again? I was one of the detractors saying, why would you bring the retread? It didn't work the first time back the second time, right? You didn't get anywhere net positive with Bobo the last time when he was the OC. You bring him back again. Obviously, the results were different through a 12-game sample size. 13 game, including the SEC championship. Yeah. So
don't say that to Barbara Dooley, by the way. She thought Mike Bobo did a great job, and so did I.
Well, he did it by the end of the year. He did
a great job.
The first 3 or 4 weeks, it was fair to question whether this offense was going to be legitimate or not.
Yeah. By the way, Barbara's going to join us again this season. Looking forward to it as we get into our Dogs coverage and her stories and just being around that program all the years that her and certainly the legendary Vince Dooley have been. So we're looking forward to those conversations. I'll say this about Carson Beck. He enters 2024, and this is what we did know last year. He enters this season, okay, as the number one quarterback. Now, you may not agree with it. You may think that that is short-sighted, thinking about all these other quarterbacks, but I'm going to tell you right now, coming into the season, there's nobody that has seen Carson Beck and seen him play and done study on him that is thinking about anything less than Carson Beck being the number one guy at his position. Quinn Ewers is right there, okay? And that's why the Texas game is going to be so big. Jalen Milroe, some people think, he's going to be there. Dylan Gabriel from Oregon. These are all quarterbacks that we're going to be talking about.
Gabriel's still in college?
Yeah, he just transferred from Oklahoma to Oregon.
Transferred like four times already. They got to put a clamp on this transfer portal thing.
What do you want me to do? I mean, this NIL thing and this portal thing.
Why is Van Wilder still playing college football?
No, that's a good question. Shador Sanders. I mean, I'm just saying, these are the quarterbacks that we're going to be talking about. Jackson Dart at Ole Miss. But the number one guy, and this is where I think differentiates last year versus this year, to your point about earlier in the season, I don't think that anybody's doubting now what Carson Beck is. And last year you were concerned because you weren't sure coming off of the two national championships. It's Dukes and Bell at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mark Zeno in for Mike today, as I said. Let's hear from Mark Raimondi, because we were asking him about the roster. And were there any surprises after the 53 was released?
Well, I hate to interrupt this riveting espresso conversation, guys, but I guess we'll talk a little bit of Falcons for a few minutes. Not a ton of huge surprises, to be honest. There were a few kind of ones that you have to underline. You know, Taylor Heinicke, what were they going to do with him? Were they going to release him? Were they going to try to trade him? That still might happen, but right now he's on the 53-man roster. A couple guys who played great during the preseason, Sean Brooks, the cornerback, and Chris Blair, the wide receiver. They were two of the Falcons' best players, you know, in the preseason games, and, you know, they did not make the roster. I expect both of them to be on the practice squad. And then a corner like Kevin King, you know, who also played well in preseason games. He's a veteran. He has a relationship going back to Green Bay with Jerry Gray, the assistant coach. And I really felt that Kevin King was going to make the team, and he'll probably be on the practice squad, but he did not make the roster. And a guy like, you know, Jovan Gwynn, you know, they went with 9 offensive linemen, which I did not expect, but I kind of get it. You know, of course, that's an important role in the team. So those are kind of the ones that you know, I didn't have on my projection, which actually wasn't too far off, which I was kind of, you know, these things can get a little haywire. But, yeah, nothing too crazy.
Mark, for the secondary, only 5 cornerbacks against, you know, mostly 3 wide receiver sets, nickel package looking a little thin here, unless some of these safeties are going to expect to play kind of nickel corner kind of deal. Are you concerned about the lack of depth, at least at the corner position?
Yeah, that's why in my projection I had, you know, Kevin King in there. You know, I had Sean Brooks in there. King is a guy that can play safety and corner, so he kind of had that versatility. They're gonna have a lot, and gonna need to have a lot of faith in Jesse Bates and Justin Simmons. That's just the fact of the matter, and I'm sure they do. You know, possibly the best safety tandem in the entire league, but you know, they're going to need a guy like Clark Phillips III to step up, and I think he will. He's had a really good training camp. You know, they need Mike Hughes to do really well, you know, D'Alford in the nickel. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, I think Antonio Hamilton Sr. is a good player, but I'm a little surprised that there wasn't a Brooks or a King or even a guy like Anthony Johnson who played, you know, pretty well in the summer as well.
It is Mark Raimondi, guys, talking with us about this roster. We were talking about, you know, on paper, it looks really good. I don't know if you've given your projections yet, but, you know, we were talking about, is this team potentially the second or third best team in the NFC? I know nobody wants to believe that because of what happened last year, Mark, but as you look at this team on paper, it's a lot of talent here.
It's a lot of talent, and you know, we've been talking for months, guys, about the offense, you know, how good the offense is and could be with the additions with Kirk Cousins, with, you know, young players who could break out like a Drake London, Kyle Pitts returning to, you know, that rookie year form, Bijan Robinson. But now they've added 2 impact players on the defensive side of the ball. And you have to say that, you know, you add those 2 guys, it makes everyone else better. What can they really do? And I really feel like, you know, if you're a Falcons fan, I think it's a winning season at you know, at the least, you know, that you want. You know, I think if they don't win 10 games, it's almost a disappointment because of the roster they put together. You know, of course, you never know until you get out there and the games start getting played, which is thankfully coming up pretty soon. I'm kind of sick of this, you know, this training camp business and these preseason games. But you don't know. But I think if you're a Falcons fan, if it's not 10 wins, I don't think you consider it a very good season.
When we look at sort of the offensive setup, you know, we were remarking earlier about the number of 3 wide receiver sets the Falcons play. You know, last year there was 4 tight ends on this team. I know Arthur Smith used them differently, but I mean, are we assuming that we're going to see, based off of the roster, that there's only 5 wide receivers, that we're going to see Kyle Pitts in more of a natural third wide receiver set formation as opposed to on the end of the line as a tight end?
That could be the philosophy of only taking 5 wide receivers for the 53 man, but that could all change. You know, there's a lot of receivers on waivers right now. You know, there's a lot of interesting guys out there. Tim Patrick is out there. You know, I don't know if Kadarius Toney is the greatest fit for the Falcons, but there's some talent on the waiver wire, and we're going to find out in the next, you know, just a few hours, really, until, you know, tomorrow's waiver deadline. But you would think that, you know, a guy like Zach Robinson, he's going to play the 11 personnel. It's going to be a lot of three wide sets. I think I saw a stat the Falcons played. They were the second team in the preseason with the most three wide receiver sets. So that's going to be their base set. And I think Kyle Pitts is probably going to also kind of be like in a hybrid role of a tight end and wide receiver. That's why they have, you know, Charlie Warner and Ross Dwelly on the roster too, at tight end. Who can block, and Dwelly can also catch a little bit too. And Warner's, you know, showing us some pretty decent catching ability too in camp. So I think that's probably what they're thinking. But I would not be shocked if they went out and they tried to go get, you know, a receiver, because they, you know, they lost Rondell Moore, and that was a guy that could have made an impact this year to an extent. And, you know, they didn't really backfill that role.
I like the linebackers. I said this: Caden Ellis, Troy Anderson, Nate Landman, the Hammer, J.D. Bertrand, the rookie. Tell me what do you like about the defensive personnel, just, you know, outside of Bates and Simmons, because I think that's a given, right? We all feel pretty good about the back half now. What do you like about the defense? Is it the front seven? Is it the linebackers? A.J. Terrell gets his bag. What are you looking at there?
I mean, I think you mentioned those inside linebackers, and I know that Raheem Morris likes those guys a lot. You just have to hope they get healthy, because, you know, Landman missed the last couple of weeks with an injury, and so did Caden Ellis. He has a groin injury. Landman has a quad. And that's concerning, because those guys are kind of, you know, I don't want to say that they're heart and soul of the defense, because a guy like Grady Jarrett is probably that. But, you know, in the middle of the field, you know, those are the guys that, you know, they're wearing the green dot. You know, they call the plays a lot of the time, you know. So it's a little concerning that those guys have not been out there for the last couple of weeks. So we'll see if they're day to day, if they're back for week one. That's what everyone hopes, of course. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you added Judon to that, you know, pass rushing core, you still need someone else to step up, of course, but he's going to make guys better. He's going to make a Lorenzo Carter better. He's going to make an Arnold Epiketty better. Mm. And you figure, you know, a Simmons is going to make guys better too. We just talked about the secondary. So there's definitely hopes that, I mean, it's a better defense now than it was at the starting training camp, but there's still some questions, of course.
He's Mark Ramondi, ESPN.com. Falcons reporter joining us here on Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm curious with the guys, you know, the defensive linemen, the offensive linemen. How many of these guys, given the new kickoff rule, because it's not a 65-yard sprint down the field now, are we going to see some of these guys have expanded roles on kickoff coverage?
Yeah, certainly possible. And you could see some of the guys that made it and didn't make it, they were thinking of special teams. You know, D'Angelo Malone made the team, and, you know, he's a special teams guy. I think that, you know, that's something that he's going to definitely specialize in, no pun intended. But, yeah, it certainly could be. And to be honest, I don't know if they even know yet, because, the preseason was a little bit of an indicator of what those new kickoff rules are going to look like. But until you get your regular guys in there and see what works and what doesn't, I think it's going to be an interesting first few weeks of the season across the league, because I don't think anyone quite knows exactly what to do. And, you know, just like anything else in the NFL, like, things are going to evolve, you know, strategies are going to evolve for that. And I think the Falcons are going to have to adjust with that new rule as well.
All right, Mark, as we look at, you know, around the league, there were some names and whatnot. We'll go through some of this once we get done with Mark and tell you a few of them. But one of them was Desmond Ridder. Mark and I were talking about this, and, you know, it's one thing when a guy doesn't make it in one place, right? And guys all the time in the NFL go other places and they have success. But Ridder was released today. He's not going to be the backup for Kyler Murray out there in Arizona. And, you know, for everybody that was here last year that experienced that and said, okay, maybe he needs another year. All right, he needs this, he needs that. What's this say? Does it say that, hey, everybody that said, you know what, he's not the guy was absolutely right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, certainly not right now, right? I mean, and he got the opportunity last year, and, you know, we know what happens. I don't want to kill the guy.
Sure,
know,
sure.
By all accounts, you know, really nice guy. It didn't work out this summer with him in Arizona. Maybe he catches on somewhere else. I'm sure he will. He has potential, right? He has tools. He has things that you like, but for whatever reason, which, you know, to be honest, a lot of the quarterbacks in his draft class, very similar issues, you know, on paper look real good, right?
Yeah.
Hasn't panned out that way. And I'm not sure what it's going to take, or, you know, if it's a system thing or a scheme thing, you don't really know, but yeah, it just has not panned out for Ridder so far in the NFL.
Mark, I think it's a mistake to keep the third quarterback, to be honest with you. I don't see the reason for it. That's not a knock on Taylor Heinicke. I just, roster flexibility, depth at other positions, for a guy who's going to see the field, unless the plan is that Taylor Heinicke is the backup and Michael Penix is the emergency quarterback.
Oh, here you go.
I'm just saying that's a valid, very smart and valid plan. What's the reason to keep a third quarterback on this roster?
I mean, another veteran in the room. You know, I mean, maybe Kirk Cousins wanted a, you know, another guy in there who he can, you know, discuss, you know, another guy to help, you know, Penix, you know, a buffer, something like that. I mean, he's a guy that
you can hire a coach to do that, Mark.
I'm not even disagreeing, but it's you know, you're at and you know what, there's still a week and a half until week one, and maybe he's still a guy that gets moved, you know, for a pick, or you know, who knows.
Correct.
You know, even Taylor Heinicke has been saying the last few weeks, if you listen closely to him, you know, even he knew that it was a possibility he was not going to make this team. So I don't know. I mean, certainly a guy that you'd like to have, you know, just as a guy, you know, because he has that experience and he has that mind. But, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, down the road in the next few days and weeks here.
Mark, appreciate you, man, as always. Know it's been busy, but look forward to seeing you now that we're to game week next week. Enjoy the weekend, man, and it's all next week. We appreciate
Thanks,
you.
Mark.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Good stuff. Roster set. And now we know what quarterback we're facing. Russell Wilson has been named week one starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're going to talk more about that in our NFL Blitz, which is on the way. Cowboys sign another running back. And what does Steve Young say about all the guys who are holding out for the 49ers? We got it coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.